Are you ready for some football? We are. It's finally time to talk about the game. So come on and listen to the Mic Drop Sports Podcast.
You are listening to the Mic Drop Sports Podcast, dropping the mic on the top stories in sports. Now give it up for your hosts, Mike Schneid and Zach Stein.
Welcome, what is up, to the NFL Week 1 episode of the Mic Drop Sports Podcast. Mike Schneid and Zach Stein, ready to finally talk about actual football games, not just free agency, not just hypotheticals, and not just previews. It's about time.
I'm so excited. I watched the most college football that I've watched, like, in years over this past weekend, just in anticipation. I enjoyed it. I'm pumped for NFL. I'm ready for Thursday night. People in Chicago are pumped about the Bears, even though I hate them. But just exciting times ahead. I'm so excited for NFL to be back.
Well, I know you're pumped about the Bears because you teased them and you talked about them heavily in our preview podcast. And we're both really big on the Packers. So we'll do the picks and previews of the top five games that we determine. That'll definitely be one of them. And we'll do some college stuff at the end, but as excited we are as we are for the games, I feel like there's a couple of stories we still need to kind of touch on. The biggest one being Andrew Luck. You and I texted immediately that night. We haven't talked about it much, but when we did our preview podcast, I was super high on the Colts. I thought the Colts built a great roster, one of the best in football. I was pumped about the fact that Luck played 16 games last year and that he was going to come back. I know he had injuries, but he's always had injuries, so I just assumed he'd come back strong. And he shockingly retired, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around this, right?
I was so shocked when you sent it. Your text to me broke the news to me.
Mic Drop Sports.
And so I was shocked. And you only – so the crazy part was how the news came and how you sent it to me. You only sent me the text. So it wasn't like – it wasn't from, like, Adam Schefter. It was just the text. And obviously, I just know that, like, you were not messing around. Like, that's not, like, our nature of our friendship is, like, to mess around with that. So obviously, I see that. I go on Twitter immediately and search it. And the first thing I do is to make sure that you didn't get got and it was actually the real Adam Schefter who tweeted it and not one of the fake ones. And it just hit me. And I was shocked. It was like – It almost is like a terrible thing, but it was like, it was so shocking that I almost felt like Andrew Luck died almost just because it just was that crazy. Like, obviously he had this weird injury that's been lingering and we've known that what's happened with like a crazy injury with him before and he's missed the full season. And I was thinking maybe something along the lines with that where he might have been started off, you know, on the IR and missed the first 6 weeks. Like that was like worst case scenario for me with him. And then to just hear that he retired, I was gutted. But then in a weird way, I watched his press conference, the impromptu one, which he was supposed to do the day after. And I was actually comforted by him giving his really, really well-written speech and reasons why he was doing it. And I've never respected someone more than I did Andrew Luck at that moment in time.
You just used two really good words, gutted and comforted. I think that's a really good way to kind of describe those feelings. But when I broke that to you, though, I get Adam Schefter tweets to my phone. So I got the text from him. So that's why I was kind of stunned. I'm like, wait, did somebody hack his Twitter? Because, and I looked at it 100 times. I'm like, there's definitely a blue check mark, right? Like, this is 100% the real Adam Schefter. It was such a stunning story because of the timing of it and everything. I agree with you from the standpoint that it's like gutting. I mean, I love Andrew Luck. I love watching him play. I'm gutted from the standpoint. So I'm not like your boy Dan Dockich or Doug Gottlieb. I'm not going to attack Andrew Luck for retiring, but I'm personally really upset and disappointed only because I loved watching him play. And I just always felt like he could have been one of the all-time greats. I mean, his career was really derailed by injuries. He always had so much potential. And it always felt like his potential was like a little bit untapped, that he never got to the Peyton Manning level. So from that standpoint,
until last year.
Yeah, I mean, last year when he... he did second most touchdowns. He had 39 touchdowns last year.
Yeah, I'm bummed. I'm not mad at him, obviously. Like, that's
of course not. I'm just
but mad like, but of course, I am. Grant, I agree. It's disappointing. It's like when I mean, obviously, it's a little different scenario. But like when you have guys like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and Dwayne Wade, like all retire, who we've grown up watching, it's a little bit different because like we've seen their full career come circle. And last year was really the beginning of what we were going to see from Andrew Luck in a career. They finally built that team, like you just mentioned, around him, where there was a great offensive line and he wasn't getting sacked for his life and running for his life. And then, you know, I mean, obviously T.Y. Hilton had a monster year with him, and then they finally had a defense. Like, this was they were really starting to enter a Super Bowl window. And it's just the truth of the brutality of the football game, where football took away Andrew Luck's prime of his career just because he just had so many nagging injuries. And this is something that I can't relate to, because I've had my fair share of injuries, but nothing serious. And I'm not an athlete or anything like that. But it's like for him to keep going through, like what he mentioned was like injury, rehab. I can only imagine how mentally exhausting that is on top of all the pressure. And it's just, you know, after the initial shock and listening to him speak, it's just something where now I've come to terms with. Obviously, I'm disappointed, but I'm never going to attack the guy for hanging up the cleats and walking away with essentially a clean bill of health.
No, Dan Dockich and Doug Gottlieb were both idiots, and I'm still really angry that they were attacking him personally. I can't compare myself to Andrew Luck in any way, but I do have like a back issue, so I do have limitations with some things that I can do. It sucks. It bothers me. It drives me insane sometimes. So from that standpoint, yes, I totally understand on a much smaller scale that Andrew Luck was probably driven insane by the fact that he couldn't get healthy. He couldn't get his body right, and he couldn't do what he wanted to do, and he had limitations. And then the other word you used was comforted. Yeah, I'm – you know, good for him. You hear so many horror stories about football players and the way that their careers end, and sometimes the way that their lives end. So he made a very difficult choice. I know he's married. I think his wife is actually pregnant. So he did what he wanted to do to live his life. I mean, I think he's 29, 30 years old. He's got a whole life ahead of him now. And he also has a Stanford education. So he could do anything.
Yeah, I'm not worried for Andrew Luck with life after football. This is a brilliant human being. And I'm hoping that he can still be involved in football some way. Like I don't know if it's going to be an announcing or coaching or anything like that, but just the way I've enjoyed Tony Romo life after football, I'm hoping we can get some Andrew Luck after football as well, just because I enjoy him. He's just very grounded and very knowledgeable, and he's able to construct words just where you can really understand what he was going through. And I'm just going to be rooting for him for the rest of his life, because I just know that, you know, I think he's at peace with this. And if he's at peace, I'm at peace. I just hope that we get to see more Andrew Luck somehow in some way.
Yeah, a lot of people suggested that he should get back into football. I would have to think it's going to take a couple of years. You got to think that this was pretty draining, and he wants to kind of step away from the sport to make peace with it first. Do you think he's done, though? You don't think we'll ever see him play again? His father does run the XFL.
I'd personally be shocked. I think we have a better chance of seeing Gronkowski come back this year and play than we do of Andrew Luck ever coming back. It's just,
I think we are going to see Gronkowski.
It's very possible. I just think Luck is, I mean, he's been so injured, and I mean, I can only imagine what that is like, and it can't be fun and it can't be enjoyable. And he mentioned it took away the joy from the game. And then once you lose the joy for the game, he's got the money, he's got the Stanford education, then why play? Because it's just not worth it. It's such a violent sport. It's not worth it.
From a football standpoint, I like Jacoby Brissett. I actually think the Colts are going to be okay because I think they've done a really good job of building up that team. I think in the past, and you mentioned this before, the offensive line used to suck, and they got him. It forced him into retirement. The defense was horrible, and it forced him to put up 40 points a game. They have a really good, well-rounded team now. So they're not completely reliant on his success. I think Brissett is a decent quarterback. I think he'll be good. I think in our football preview podcast, I said they were 11-5 or 12-4. I had the Colts as like a Super Bowl contender. Obviously, they're not there anymore, but 8-9 wins to me is realistic. And competing for that sixth wild card spot, I think that's still a realistic goal for the Colts.
I agree with that. I mean, this is a guy that when Andrew Luck was out for the year, and shocking, this was the guy that the Colts went out and traded for. So they liked him then. Obviously, it was a mess that year because they traded for him, and it was like 2 weeks before the regular season, or like the week of, and you just throw him in there, and that offensive line was terrible. The defense wasn't all that good. So that was just a disaster waiting to happen. Now, fast forward this, he's now had a year, an extra year to learn the offense, had a full year to learn from Andrew Luck too, and from what it looked like, Andrew Luck and Brissett had a pretty good relationship. So I imagine Andrew Luck was pretty hands-on with some development stuff with Brissett. And then Brissett's been playing the whole preseason. Andrew Luck wasn't practicing. So Brissett was getting all first-team reps, all offseason, preseason. So, and that's valuable. So this is a guy now who understands this offense. It's a much better team. I fully expect Brissett to be a fully capable quarterback where, yes, I think the offense is obviously going to take a step back because, I mean, you're going from a top three quarterback in the league to Brissett, but this is not going to be a tanking team like it was Brissett 2 years ago. This is going to be a solid team. They might be able to fight for a wild card. That'd be a great story if they do. But this is not a bad team by any means.
Yeah. It's a very top heavy AFC. So like, I think the South stinks. The East outside of the Patriots pretty much stinks. In the West, I'm not that high in the Chargers, and the other two teams stink outside of the Chiefs. So they're really competing with a couple of teams in the North, maybe. I don't think there's a whole lot of teams standing in their way of getting to the playoffs. I thought they were going to win the South. I'm obviously flipping that now. You always thought the Texans were going to win the South. You were really high on them. They did a lot of stuff this past weekend on cutdown day. I don't know that I've ever seen like such a crazy cutdown day. Usually you make like one or two surprise cuts or a trade. They did a lot.
Yeah, as a Texans truther, this has been a pretty good couple weeks for me right now. Obviously, I mean, it starts with, you know, Luck retiring. And now that clearly the Texans have the best quarterback in that division now, which changes everything. But I personally, I thought Twitter was a little harsh on the Texans. I loved everything they did.
No, Twitter was harsh on something? What do you mean?
It was – I'm impressed. Clearly what the Texans did was realize – and I know that they don't have a GM, so it looks sloppy, but it's not sloppy. What the Texans did was they made the announcement, Deshaun Watson is our future. What do we need to do to find a way to enter a Super Bowl window and do it? Jadeveon Clowney did not want to be a part of this franchise anymore. So what they do, they flip him for a couple defenders, which they needed. And these guys are fine. They're solid. They're nothing like exciting about, but depth is depth. And then they traded a ton of picks to Dolphins. They get possibly the best left tackle in the game right now, which is huge because the Texans needed offensive line to help their franchise quarterback. And then they get a decent wide receiver out of it too, and Kenny Stills. So now that they already had a good wide receiver core, in my opinion. Now you add Stills as a deep threat for Watson. And then obviously they get Carlos Hyde as well. I'm not a huge fan of him, but it's still, it's another body. And now you're obviously they're the division favorites now with Luck retired.
I don't like Carlos Hyde, but I do like Duke Johnson. And part of my issue with the Texans and why I did not have them winning the division like you is I didn't trust the run game and I had no faith in their offensive line. But getting Tunsil obviously is a huge deal. And now they have the rookie Titus Howard. They can move him to right tackle. Tunsil slots in at left. I mean, this is a much improved team. The Clowney thing. So my issue with Clowney when it first came out was I thought they needed to get an offensive lineman from the Seahawks or maybe Rashad Penny or something.
Right.
Getting two defensive guys didn't make sense, but then a few hours later, you piece it all together. They got a couple of defensive assets and Tunsil. Penny Stills being thrown in is weird, but I guess Kiki Kuti can never stay healthy, and Will Fuller has had injury issues. So I love Kenny Stills as a player. That's kind of a sneaky, really big move for Deshaun Watson. And yeah, the Texans are by far the favorites in a division that I think you and I agree is not very good with the Titans and the Jaguars below them.
Right. So they did what they had to do. And hats off to that organization. There's no captain of that ship right now with no GM. So
Which is so weird.
It's so weird because I can only imagine what they were doing as a franchise to make all these calls and doing it. I just imagine, you know, Kevin Costner and like draft day and just and just going completely rogue and it finally worked out. And it is what it is. I think the Dolphins are huge winners out of this as well because they essentially just traded for their future with all these picks. And then the Seahawks add Clowney to sort of re-identify their defense as well. So all three teams around, or I guess the two other teams around the Texans and the Eagles, it's rare when you get win-win-win for every side.
Yeah, Seahawks just always seem to find a way to add really talented players and reload. I guess it's a win from the Dolphins from the standpoint that they get the future first-round picks. You have to see how they use them. They haven't really used them well the last few years, and they just traded one of the best left tackles in football and their best offensive player. So, I mean, they're going to stink. I think we should just make a vow now to never talk about the Dolphins unless we're saying tank for Tua. I don't know why they chose Fitzpatrick over Josh Rosen. That bothers me also. Josh Rosen's going to stink again this year, and it won't be his fault.
Yeah, this I obviously, yeah. We're beating the horse here with the Dolphins, but I agree. Poor Josh Rosen. I mean, this is a first-round quarterback who was a pretty big prospect, like looked pretty good at UCLA. And since he's been in the NFL, the teams he have been on have done nothing to help him be successful in it. And it sucks because, I mean, he's going to stay in the NFL, but we're not going to know what Josh Rosen is for a long time.
Yeah, it's crazy. So with everything that the Texans did, a lot of people were suggesting that they should go upgrade running back with Lamar Miller out. Even when Lamar Miller was healthy, I think people were suggesting that they go get Melvin Gordon, who's obviously been holding out. One of the biggest stories of the summer has been him and Ezekiel Elliott not being in training camp. I think Zeke is going to be there. It sounds like we're getting closer and closer. But Melvin Gordon, it seems like there's no resolution in sight. So what do you make of those two holdouts and kind of what comes next for the Cowboys and the Chargers?
I'm expecting the Zeke deal to be done tonight and he's at practice tomorrow. Obviously, he flew back from Cabo with his representation today. I think he's on his way to the facilities now to really just bunker down with Jerry and his reps and just make him the highest paid running back. It sounds like that's sort of agreed upon. It's just now guaranteed money and where the money's thrown throughout the contract. So my guess is he's signed tonight. I don't think we're going to see Melvin Gordon play until week 10. I think that's the magic number because if he doesn't report like after week 10, I think that he's got to play out his fifth year contract, which I don't think he wants to do at all. So, because I think if he comes back in week 10, if he becomes a free agent. So I think that's when we will see Melvin Gordon.
Yep, week 10 is that magic number. Yeah, I agree. Zeke will be there. I think it's just a question of when the trade gets done and if he does play week one. I know I loaded up on Zeke in fantasy drafts, knowing that he was going to be there. Jerry Jones is just a businessman. He's sort of been insulting him in the media, but he always knew what he was doing. I actually started to develop this idea that he wasn't going to come back until week four, and maybe he still won't because the Cowboys open up with the Giants, the Redskins, and the Dolphins. Three teams that have a chance to be among the three worst teams in the league. They can win games without him. And then week four, they play the Saints. So, you know, even if he does sign, I would just sit Zeke the first couple weeks and let him play against the Saints and then let him stay a little bit fresher for later in the season. The Melvin Gordon thing, yeah, I don't know if there's a resolution in sight. And I stand by what I said when we previewed them. I don't think Ekeler and Justin Jackson are anything special. I don't think this offensive line is as special as it used to be. And Chargers could be a 9-7 team without Melvin Gordon. They'll compete for the wild card, but nothing more. And I wouldn't be shocked if they missed the wild card.
Yeah, you're taking a little bit of a step back from Melvin Gordon to that duo. I still have faith in Phillip Rivers. He's a gamer. They got Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Hunter Henry. Pretty big fan of that receiving trio right there. I still think this is a double-digit win team. They're not going to win the division because the Chiefs are there. But obviously, they're not a Super Bowl contender without Melvin Gordon. So it's just going to be interesting. And then it'll be real. I don't anticipate it, but if the Chargers get off to an 0-3 start or something like that, and Justin Jackson and Eckler like are not effective at all, I'd be curious to see if the Chargers are willing to cave sooner to pay him.
And of course, that's what he's probably banking on. It's funny to me that we talk about the last like 10 or 12 Super Bowl champions have not had an elite running back. And yet we're sitting here talking about the Cowboys and the Chargers have Super Bowl hopes riding on Zeke and Gordon. So it's kind of contradictory, but it's not untrue. It's interesting how running backs are valued now.
Right. But it's tough. Like, I mean, obviously the Patriots are a different story, but Sony Michel was a very, very good running back for the Patriots last year. So and their identity in the playoffs was being able to run the ball and pick up a ton of first downs. So clearly, I mean, it's important to having the right fit. The Cowboys are obviously, I mean, I'm sure Tony Pollard would have played fine because they're a great offensive line, but the Cowboys are a great team because of Zeke. The Chargers would be a better team because of Melvin Gordon. Now with the Chargers, is it that much of a difference where you need to pay Melvin Gordon this much money? That's where I disagree, where I think the Cowboys are a legitimate Super Bowl contender with Zeke there over Tony Pollard.
Yeah, that I definitely agree. I agree. I mean, Zeke, I agree from the standpoint that the Chargers, I still think, can go 9-7 and be a playoff contender without Gordon. Cowboys aren't going 9-7 without Zeke. I love Dak. I think Dak is worth $30 million. I think he's a great quarterback, but Zeke makes him go. I will say that. So he needs Zeke. The Cowboys need him. I think he'll be there. And we'll see how it all plays out. So one more story, and then we can get into the games. This Carly Lloyd story that people are talking about her kicking in an NFL game or kicking in a preseason game. Obviously, people on Twitter that are adamantly against having a female kick in an NFL game. But what do you think about that?
It's just very weird. It's because we've never seen anything like it. If anything, like Little League is maybe the most progressive sport out there because you will have girls and boys playing on the same team now. So, I mean, you're seeing sort of the integration going. My thing is, and I know that everyone says, oh, like Justin Tucker, like best kicker ever, has made like five tackles in his career or whatever. But that's still five tackles. And if people, there's insane blocking. the last thing in the world needs is Carly Lloyd to get absolutely crushed and severely injured. I don't know how the locker room issues would work with, you know, a female teammate on there and stuff like that. So obviously protecting her there, because I don't know if we can trust all the athletes in the league with just, you know, some of the criminal activity that's been going on with a bunch of players. So just having a female in there, like, I just don't know. I would, if she were to sign with the team, obviously I'd root for her. That'd be a really cool story. I don't know how it would work.
Yeah, I want to see it. I just think it would be awesome. I think it would be like a huge step for the world to see it. But yeah, I think the locker room and like the culture of the NFL is what worries me. Poisoning her and just having a female in the locker room. I mean, we have female reporters in the locker room. I know it's not the same. I mean, they'd almost have to get her another locker room. I don't know. I want to see it. I want to see her be successful, and I want to see how it plays out, because I think it would just be a really cool story. And most of the kickers in the NFL suck anyway. So what does any team have to lose giving her a shot?
Right. It'd be fun. If the XFL wants to do a test run with it to see how it works, that'd be awesome. But yeah, I mean, I won't say no, but I was just saying I'm a little weary of it.
All right. So let's get to week one, because I'm super excited. There's a lot of good matchups, a couple of weird matchups that I don't really care for. But what are you, now that we're talking to talk about games, what are you excited for this week? What are you looking for? What are you hoping to see? Whether it's your Vikings or whether it's, you know, any of these games or teams.
Yeah, I guess I can just start off quickly with my Vikings. They're opening up with a really tough home game against the Falcons, who I think is going to be one of the better teams in the NFC this year. Obviously, the biggest thing with the Vikings is seeing more consistent play out of Kirk Cousins. Everything that we've been reading is that they're going to go run more run heavy with Dalvin Cook, which, I mean, he's proven to be very effective when he's healthy. I still don't buy it that he's a 16-week player, so they want to keep giving him the ball. That's a big risk, in my opinion. So I'm looking for Cousins to have a pretty effective game against a good Falcons team. I'm pumped. As much as I hate these two teams, there's no cooler way to open up the NFL season with the Bears-Packers rivalry. Obviously, the Bears are a huge talk right now. I picked them to win the Super Bowl in our podcast before. So just looking to see if Trubisky takes a step forward, to see if the defense is as dominant as last week. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers seems to have that as health. So pretty excited for that game.
I'm excited for points, for lots and lots of points. I think it'll be fun to see Odell Beckham and Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, Le'Veon Bell in the backfield with the Jets, with Adam Gase, who is that offensive background, and Sam Darnold, Carson Wentz, hopefully returning healthy. They added DeSean Jackson. They added your boy, Jordan Howard. Obviously, the Rams and the Chiefs are very explosive. We'll see what the Jaguars can do with Nick Foles. Arizona with Cliff Kingsbury, who's an offensive wizard, and obviously Kyler Murray, and then Tampa Bay added Bruce Arians as their head coach. So lots of exciting stories all over with coaches and quarterbacks and new players. And I'm just excited to see lots and lots of points, and that could benefit everybody's fantasy team in the process.
Yeah, I definitely think score is going to be up. We're at the point now where there's not a lot of QB holes in the league right now. So obviously with improved QB play equals just more exciting games, more points like you mentioned because of that. So I'm super excited to just look at all these young guys and see how they develop, because they are developing quicker than they did in years past. And I think maybe some of the NFL rules also allow that to happen, but I think that's a good thing. So it's seeing these guys like Kyler Murray, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Trubisky, seeing these guys step up and become good quarterbacks is good for the league, because good quarterbacks equals parity throughout the NFL.
Absolutely. So let's start. So we listed out the five games that we thought were the five best. And if you want to see thoughts on more games, you can check out our Twitters at MSchneid or at ZStein and at Stein's Lines 1 as well as MikeDropSports.com. So we'll go through five games. We're going to keep a running tally all year. We'll see who does the best. So we'll start with the Thursday game, Bears-Packers. You've said it a few times. You have the Bears going to the Super Bowl, and we're both pretty high in the Packers. I just think there's a lot of slander of Aaron Rodgers, the way that Mike McCarthy was fired and the way that last season kind of went. I think a lot of people are questioning him and doubting him. And I just keep thinking about last year's game, how epic that was. Khalil Mack made his debut, forced fumble early on, pick six. He was a monster. And then Aaron Rodgers reminded everybody that he's Aaron Rodgers, and he threw three touchdowns in the fourth quarter to win in week one. And I don't think it'll be that dramatic, but I think Aaron Rodgers is once again going to say, you know, remember, like, don't forget about me. I know we're all sad about Andrew Luck. I know we're all crazy about Tom Brady and his Super Bowls, and Patrick Mahomes is awesome, but I'm still here. And I think the Packers will come out and put on an offensive clinic with new coach Matt LaFleur, and now beat the Bears.
I'd be a hypocrite if I don't take the Bears here the week one. Obviously, yeah, like you mentioned, the Bears were so close to beating the Packers last year. I had some bad beats because I thought Rodgers was going to be out for the game. So I was live betting that game like crazy. Ended up losing a ton of money on that game. So I'm salty, just not even as, like, just as a football fan for this. So I'm taking the Bears at home. I think their defense is really good. I love David Montgomery. I think that's going to really transform their offense because they're going to have a running back who is be able to grasp the full playbook, unlike Jordan Howard, who couldn't get involved in the passing game. So I think it's going to change things up. I think it's going to make Trubisky's life a little bit easier. I do expect points to be scored in this game, though, as good as the Bears are. I think this is going to be like a 28-24 type scoring game in there with the Bears eking it out.
Yeah, the Packers added some guys in free agency on defense, but I agree. I think it'll be a fun, high-scoring affair on Sunday night. And I'm really excited because they announced this week that Carrie Underwood's original Waiting All Day for Sunday Night song is back. The song last year and the year before stunk, so that'll be super cool to see that song again. Rams-Panthers. Are the Rams in for a Super Bowl hangover? Cam Newton's been coming off shoulder surgery and rolled his ankle in his last preseason game. Who you got in the Rams-Panthers?
I'm going against the grain here. I think this is a tough way for the Rams to open up the season. I think Cam is ready to go. I am taking the Panthers.
I am too, actually. I think the way that last season ended, I mean, Cam was amazing for, I think, 10 weeks last year. And then just the wheels fell off. He got hurt. He's been hurt this preseason. And I think he's just ready to kind of explode. And a fun stat about this game, the last two. So the Panthers are 8-3 against the Rams since 2001. And those three losses came, two of them in 2001 and one of them in 2010. Both times the Rams finished with the Panthers finished with the worst record in football. And the last time the Rams won in Carolina, where this game is, they went to the Super Bowl in 2001. So a lot to look forward to. If the Rams win this, they could be Super Bowl bound. If the Panthers lose, they could spiral into the worst record in the NFL again.
Yeah, it'll be good. I think Cam's healthy. McCaffrey's awesome. It's going to be our first look at Gurley and actually see if he's healthy or if it's all lies. So there's definitely some good storylines there.
I really hope he's healthy because he won me a fantasy title 2 years ago, and I love him. But I do have some stock in Darrell Henderson just in case he's not healthy. So while I wish Gurley the best, I do have Darrell Henderson as insurance for myself. Let's do Falcons-Vikings. So I think this is a fun game. I know you touched on it a little bit before, but definitely two teams that are going to be very much in the mix. Maybe not in their divisions, but definitely competing for the wild card. So it's crazy to say in week one, but this is a huge game because the tiebreaker, this could have tiebreaker wild card implications in December and January.
Yeah, this is huge. When I saw the schedule came out, I was not thrilled about opening up against the Falcons, but I guess, you know, if you play a good team week one, you can set up yourself for a good season if you play well. So huge opportunity here for the Vikings. Obviously, I'm going to pick them to win. That would be a really bad part on me as being a fan. I think it's going to be a great game, though. I think there's going to be talk about a lot of points. I think this is going to be big points there. Hopefully, the Vikings defense could slow down Matt Ryan enough where that gives them the edge. But definitely looking for my Vikes to pull this out here.
I would pick the Vikings if Mike Boone was starting at running back, but because he's buried at number three, I'll go with the Falcons. I like what they did this offseason. They improved their offensive line. I think a more experienced Calvin Ridley, a healthier Julio Jones, and a healthy Devontae Freeman. I like the moves that they've made. They were one of the most injured teams last season. But I like what they've done this offseason, and I like them in an upset in Minnesota.
I hope you're wrong.
I'm sure you do. So, two Monday night games, only one of them that matters. I'm definitely not going to stay up to watch Broncos Raiders. But the Texans Saints should be a ton of fun. We talked about the Texans and everything that they did, and I love Watson and Hopkins, but the last time we saw the Saints, they got screwed, and they've tried to sue anybody that they can. And all we've heard is them complaining. I think they come out and instead of talking, instead of complaining, they come out and they take action. And they make a statement with action instead of with their words. And I think they're going to – it'll be a close game. It'll be a very high-scoring game. But I think they'll take care of business with relative ease in the Superdome on Monday night.
I agree. As much as I love the Texans, this is a tough spot to open with on the road against the Saints. Saints have a lot to prove. They're angry. They're going to be super motivated. I do think the Saints are going to win this game.
And then the last game is the Sunday night game. I was talking about the Sunday night theme for Bears-Packers. I wonder if they still do that on Thursday because it's on NBC. But the NBC, the real Sunday night game is the Patriots-Steelers. It's weird not seeing the champs open up at home on Thursday. But I'm going to go with the Patriots. The champion almost always wins this game. Of course, the Cowboys over the Giants, 2012, I believe that was. Cowboys won that one. And I think there's one other chance. And the Patriots lost a couple years ago to the Chiefs at home. But I don't think that highly of the Steelers team. And, yeah, I'm going to go with the champs.
I'm on with the champs, too. I'm pretty pumped. The Patriots, talk about a little interesting offseason that they've had. They went from maybe having one of the more questionable wide receiver cores in the league, and which caused people to be down on Brady. And then now in the past few weeks, with Josh Gordon being back and ready to play week one, they signed Demaryius Thomas in the offseason, and then he looked pretty damn good in their last preseason game. And so now you went from, you know, Edelman, N'Keal Harry, and Jacoby Myers, wide receiver core, to Edelman, Gordon, Demaryius Thomas. Talking a whole new ball game here. So I'm pretty excited to see what this Patriots team is. I think Brady's still going to be very Brady-esque this year, even without Gronk. And they basically didn't have Gronk all last year. He was super limited. So I'm looking for the Patriots to come out and make a statement that they're still the team to beat. And they're going to win this game.
And it's interesting that they put N'Keal Harry on the IR because I think this is just a Bill Belichick Patriots thing. They're going to stash him there for 8 weeks, and then they'll activate him in the second half after he's sat through practices, sat through film session, after he's learned from two really good pros, two really good veterans in Thomas and Edelman, and he'll be fresh and ready to go in the second half. I do think he's hurt, so it's not like they're just stashing him there, but I think that there's some gamesmanship going on here by the Patriots that they're trying to kind of develop him behind the scenes and get him fresh for December and January.
Absolutely.
And I want to pull one more game because I think we agreed on too many games, and I think we'll disagree on this one. Colts Chargers, who you have there?
I have the Chargers. Obviously, I complimented Brissett there, but I'm a Philip Rivers believer. I think they're gonna. There's a lot of motivation for that team to win to prove that they don't need Melvin Gordon. And obviously, you could probably say the same thing without Kolsa. They have a lot to prove that they can win without Andrew Luck right now. But I'm still gonna go with the Chargers here.
I'm going with the Colts. I really like what they did with this roster, and this isn't a true home game. The Chargers don't have a home field advantage. I think Brissett is going to come out and surprise some people, and the Chargers come in a little bit vulnerable. They have injuries on the O-line. Derwin James is out for a couple of months, so I like the Colts to go into L.A. and steal a victory week one.
That would be a fun upset.
Who do you have as, like, the trendy team in Survivor this week?
I would take the Ravens.
It's
hard to, you know, it's rare to be able to be confident with a road team in Survivor. I'm personally not doing it this year. I've had some terrible luck as well, but and I know it's probably a very trendy pick and you want to go against the grain, but I'm not really sure when you would be able to use the Ravens again. I think a lot of people's strategies are going to be to pick against the Dolphins throughout the year. So the most important part in Survivor is still to survive. And if you're not using, you know, a top 10 team in the league, that's still a valuable pick to go with the Ravens week one. So I would pick the Ravens and start prepping for week two.
I agree. My dad has rules to follow. One of those rules is don't take a road team. But I think one of those rules for this year is always pick against the Dolphins. So I think those rules kind of cancel each other out. The last two times the Ravens played the Dolphins, Ravens won 38-6 in 2016 and 40-0 in 2017. So I'd be pretty confident taking the Ravens if I was doing Survivor. Any final thoughts before we wrap up week one and talk about college football a little bit?
I'm pretty wrapped up with the NFL. I'm excited to recap a little bit of last week with college football, because it was there were some really fun games.
Yeah, so you were locked in, which is awesome, because you're not a huge college football guy. But what did you learn? What did you take away? Tell me.
I mean, it started going into week zero with the Florida game. We can just start there really quickly. I personally was doing all my research. I personally thought the Gators were going to take a step forward. I thought Felipe Franks was primed to have a monster breakout year. He looked completely average there in that game. So I don't know if Miami is back or not, but I'm not sold on the Gators. That's for sure. Starting there. Then I thought your Bearcats looked good, but they should have won by a lot more. UCLA stinks.
100 mistakes for Cincinnati. They made a ton of mistakes, and they shot themselves in the foot over and over. I don't want to disrespect college players, because at the end of the day, they're still students. But Dorian Thompson-Robinson sucks. Good Lord, Chip Kelly is just a fraud.
Yeah, it was hard to watch him play. I mean, that guy couldn't even hold on to the football. But I like it. It was very weird. A lot of handicappers, and I'm the most amateur handicapper in the world, but a lot of handicappers picked UCLA to cover and to beat Cincy. And I thought it was disrespectful that line was only 2 or 3 points, depending on where you got it and when you got it. And it was an all-time no-brainer to take the Bearcats. So that got Stein's lines rejuvenated for a monster week.
And if you want a Stein's Lines lock of the week this week, talking about disrespect to the Bearcats, 16.5 points against Ohio State. They're not losing by more than 2 touchdowns. I'm rolling. So I'm rolling my winnings from week one onto the spread this week against the Buckeyes.
I don't think I'll be touching that game. I Justin Fields impressed me. I didn't really get to watch that game at all, but I saw the highlights. It seems like Ohio State made the right decision to start Justin Fields and let Tate Martell transfer. So that's one of the highlights. I thought the Oregon Auburn game was super interesting. I like what I see from Herbert, and I don't think it was his fault that they lost that game. I was shocked Auburn was able to win the game with their freshman quarterback, but that guy did not have that great of a game, but made plays at the end and won. So maybe Auburn, there's something there with Auburn this year if they were able to win a game like that. And then also, I believe you heard it here first when I mentioned Boise State was going to beat Florida State in that game and have a chance to run the table there. That's a good start for my prediction right there.
Yeah, that result surprised me. So Ohio State, I watched 8 minutes of that game, and apparently that's all I needed to see because they were rolling, and I'm a little scared for Saturday. Yeah, you were really high on Boise State in the college football podcast. I know that you had them doing really well. You had them beating Florida State. I thought Florida State would get back on track. I thought the offensive line would be better. The coaches would learn from their mistakes. Boy, was I wrong. They blew an 18-point lead, and my God, I don't know how much of that game you saw, but that freshman quarterback, Hank Bachmeyer, is something special. I mean, he's going to be the next great quarterback out of Boise State by far.
I was super impressed. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was nervous for my bets, so they went down 31-13. So they were down 18. And yeah. Obviously, I had faith in their offense. They had a couple of turnovers, which stalled them on some drives. So they never had issues with throwing the ball. But obviously, in that first half, Florida State had big plays. And so entering that second half, I just assumed it would be a shootout and they might lose by like two touchdowns or whatever. And I was going to lose all my bets. But then their defense just the quarterback made the quarterback comfortable and to win. And that's like Boise State's mantra for the past decade is we'll take on anyone, anywhere. It doesn't matter. The game was moved to be a true home game for Florida State because of Dorian. And I mean, this team battled in the second half and just won, and they looked great doing it. And I'm very happy. It makes me look like a genius. And so I'm definitely on a Boise State's bandwagon now this year for sure.
Yeah, poor Boise State. They didn't get to play their bowl game last year because of the weather. And then this year, the game got moved to Tallahassee. And as soon as that got moved, I was even more confident than I was before in Florida State. And yet they still blew it. And Boise State's success isn't excellent for Cincinnati because they could potentially be competing for that Group of Five bowl bid that I think will be the Cotton Bowl this year. So Boise State just picked up what could end up being one of the biggest non-conference wins for the Group of Five. There are a lot of those wins, though. Georgia State beat Tennessee. That was stunning. It was also hilarious to me because it's funny seeing Tennessee as a joke, and I don't think anybody knew that Georgia State had a football team. The Boise State win was big. Memphis beat Ole Miss, Cincy over UCLA, and then Nevada beat Purdue. They choked that one away.
I'm sure that put a smile on fantastic. Your face. Fantastic. Always. And IU gets a nice neutral site win, which just keeps our season alive, which is always fun. But then Kansas got a win with Les Miles in their opener, which is awesome. North Carolina got the win with Mack Brown, which was awesome. That was really cool. Really cool post-game interview, off-field interview with Mack Brown. Got emotional. The locker room celebration was awesome. So good for Mack Brown. Good for North Carolina there. And then also, I think we both agreed on this. Nebraska looked super flawed. They are super overrated.
I don't want to talk about Nebraska. It makes me so angry because they're still ranked and Cincinnati is not. And I don't understand why, because they won four games in 2017, four in 2018, and they stunk last week against South Alabama. So why? You don't even have to rank Cincinnati. It's fine. Just rank anybody else, not Nebraska. They don't deserve it. It's pure hype. And they didn't live up to the hype last week. They get Colorado this week, and Colorado beat them last year. And honestly, I'm rooting for Colorado to beat them again just to get them out of the top 25 because they don't belong there. They need to earn their spot there.
Yep. And then I agree with that. Nebraska is so perfect. And then also my big kudos of the week is going to go to Jalen Hurts. Awesome. That dude, wow. That guy's a football player. That's all I'm going to say. He is a true football player. Oklahoma's defense looked pretty improved. Houston has a really good offense. They made the Eric King look pretty average for a majority of that game. Oklahoma's the truth. Jalen Hurts, stud. And I'm very happy for him because obviously he's gone through a lot in his career, and that was quite the performance.
Yeah, I mean, it might happen again. It might happen again with the Heisman. He was outstanding, and I think people almost forget. I mean, he was 26-2 in 2 years. The fact that – and it almost goes to show you how good Tua Tagovailoa is, that he beat Jalen Hurts in that QB competition. That doesn't mean that Jalen Hurts isn't a good quarterback. They play Texas on October 12th. They're not really going to be tested before that. I can't wait for that game because
that's going to be incredible.
I want to see what Jalen Hurts can do. So what I learned this week is, as great as Hurts was, and he might end up being in the Heisman mix, I think we need to pay a little bit more attention to running backs who never get love in the Heisman, especially the last few years. But Jonathan Taylor at Wisconsin is unbelievable. He was the only guy to run for over 2,000 yards last year. Opened up the season with 4 touchdowns, the first 2 receiving touchdowns of his career, and 2 rushing touchdowns. And I mentioned this on our college football preview podcast. I don't have Trevor Lawrence in my top 2 because I felt that Travis Etienne is going to kind of steal some of his thunder and still some of his momentum, and he did that by running for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns in the opener. So those are 2 guys that need to get a little bit more respect, especially when it comes to the Heisman.
I 100% agree. I watched that Wisconsin game. Basically, Taylor did that in the first half. He really did not play much in the second half. Wisconsin built up a lead. They know that for them to have a big year, they got to keep him healthy. So they preserved him pretty well. He was still able to go out and get like 250 combined yards, I think, with the 4 TDs. Awesome, awesome game. Awesome start for him. And I agree with you. Etienne, a monster game where Lawrence, I mean, he made some good throws, but like Lawrence's box score was not Heisman worthy. He didn't light up anything. Obviously Clemson had a really good game and he didn't have to throw much. I'm sure his stats are going to look better through time and time again, but definitely Lawrence dropped big time in the Heisman rankings just because so many other stars completely outperformed him stat wise.
Yeah, like you said, Taylor did it on the first half. I was actually on a plane playing JetBlue. There's so much hype around South Florida. I actually had them winning that game. I was really excited to see them battle with Wisconsin, and I think it was 35-0 at the half. So I spent the rest of the flight pretty bored because I was really excited to watch that game. My other big observation from week one is that the Pac-12 is done. They're eliminated from the playoffs. That Oregon game was huge. That was their best chance at a major non-conference victory this year. Washington and Utah are considered the 2 best teams in that conference. They don't play a Power 5 opponent in the out-of-conference. They do play each other. USC just lost their quarterback. Stanford, their quarterback got a little banged up, and they have an impossible non-conference schedule. And I'm down on them in general. So Oregon needed to beat Auburn to give them to give themselves a chance to make the playoffs, but also just to give Washington more cushion to win. If they beat the team that beat Auburn, it's a big win for Washington. So Washington and Utah need to go 13-0 to make the playoffs. If either of them lose a game, they're done. I think a 1-loss, even a 2-loss team from the Big Ten, Big 12 would make it over the Pac-12 at this point.
Yep, I agree. Although Utah looked very good in their game, that defense is elite. That's a very good rivalry. To go into BYU and absolutely demolish them was impressive. I thought I have watched that Oregon-Auburn game. Like I mentioned, I thought Herbert looked really good. Oregon looked like Chip Kelly Oregon. There's a lot of speed on that team. That would have been a really, really impressive win that they almost got going into Auburn and winning it. The only reason why I bet Auburn -4, which which basically hit at the buzzer, which was awesome and really fun. Exciting way to end the week for me. That would have been my, the reason why I bet on Auburn was because I needed to be able to see a Pac-12 team go beat an SEC team, because I, they even put a stat up there that it's been since 2008, a Pac-12 team has beaten a ranked SEC team. So simply because of that stat, that's why I was on Auburn. But Oregon surprised me with how fast their players are, how talented they are. Herbert looks like the real deal. So hopefully if Oregon can win out the rest of the way, it'd be really interesting to see what the college football playoff thinks of them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And one last thought, just thinking about Oregon, because I interrupted you before to talk about UCLA. I really do think Chip Kelly's a fraud. At this point, he's now 3-10 since the start of last year. I know they have a really, really young team, but Dorian Thompson-Robinson is not good. He didn't use his best running back. I know Joshua Kelly was a little bit hurt, but for some reason he didn't play at all. The offense is pretty unoriginal at this point. Teams can read it really well, unlike 7 years ago when he was at Oregon. And one thing that really concerned me was to start the second half, he talked about the crowd noise and Nippert Stadium in Cincinnati really impacted his team. Look, that's awesome, and I know that a lot of people praise Nippert Stadium, and it was definitely loud. It was one of the best crowds we've ever had, but a Pac-12 team should not be intimidated by the Cincinnati crowd. I'm sorry. It made me laugh. That's not an excuse for Chip Kelly and for UCLA. I know they have a young team, but you can't get intimidated by the crowd noise in Cincinnati. You just can't.
Yeah, I agree. That's not a good start for Chip Kelly and UCLA. They're garbage.
And two teams that were really impressive. They played much very inferior opponents, but Texas and LSU both dominated. They play this weekend in definitely the game of the, in what's definitely the biggest game of the weekend. I think there's playoff implications here I have Texas winning on Saturday. I think they win at home against LSU. If it was in LSU, I would probably flip that pick. But I like them in Austin. I have them making the playoffs. And the reason is because beating LSU to me is will be the best non-conference win of this entire season for any team. I think LSU is going to win 9 or 10 games. They beat a Georgia Southern team that won, I think, 10 or 11 games last year. So, and they crushed them. Joe Burrow was amazing. He threw more touchdowns than incompletions. But I love Sam Ehlinger. I remain super high on him. And even though Texas is down to, I think, 2 scholarship running backs, I think Sam Ehlinger will use his legs a lot more next week. And hook 'em horns. I'm gonna go with Texas.
I agree with you. Wherever the home team, the place was being played at, I believe the home team would win. So luckily for Texas, this is at Texas. This is going to be a great clash, because I can't remember the last time where LSU had that good of a quarterback performance. It's been quite a long time. I mean, this is obviously a team that's built around defense, built around the running game. Which is funny because they've had amazing wide receivers come out of there recently, but nothing.
I always laugh at the fact that they had Beckham and Landry, and Zach Mettenberger was the quarterback.
And it's just, if you had a competent quarterback, they could have shattered records with those wide receivers. So super impressed with LSU's performance, but I agree with you. Texas is back. This is a huge opportunity for them. I agree with you. If they win this game, that's going to give them tremendous opportunity to make the playoffs. And then obviously their game against Oklahoma is going to be even that much more important after they get this win. So just super excited to keep running. When you have great teams, they need to win these opportunities. So obviously, I mean, this is a fantastic week 2 matchup.
And LSU too is interesting, because I don't think that highly of the SEC West. As some people do. LSU gets Texas A&M at home, which is a big deal. They don't play Georgia. They do play Alabama. I forget where that game is, but even if they lose to Bama and they run the rest of their schedule, they could sneak into the playoffs at 11-1 without even winning the SEC. Alabama did it a few years ago, so it's not unprecedented. I'm curious to see how both of these teams with young quarterbacks handle this situation.
Yep.
All right. Anything else? College football, NFL?
I think that's it. We'll have a lot more to talk about after these week one games and week two games.
Yeah, we actually get to talk about I'm sure there's going to be more than just games. I'm sure there'll be a stupid story, but we get to talk about games next week. More college, more NFL. I'll actually be in Columbus on Saturday, so I'm super pumped about that.
That's awesome.
It'll be a real they're not going to win. Hopefully they cover, so I can win my money back, but it'll just be a really cool experience if you've never been to – I went to Columbus a few years ago. It was actually funny looking back on it because the guy that I had never heard of named Ezekiel Elliott ran for 250 yards and three touchdowns. So now I know who he is, but we'll see. Hopefully it's close. Follow me on Twitter at MSchneid. Follow Zach at ZStein87. Also follow Stein's Lines 1 for all of his gambling tips. And check out MikeDropSports.com. Check out MikeDropSports on Instagram. And thanks for listening. We'll talk to you all next week.
Thank you all.